Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, March 24th, 2014, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. The outstanding author, editor, playwright, and literary curator, Kathleen Warnock, is back with us today for part two of her turn on this, The Erotic Mind Show. Kathleen and I had such a good time together last week, and I had so much more to discuss with her, so I asked her to come back today, and she agreed. I'm sure she'll read for us again, too, this week, because she's really sweet that way. But wait! You didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 411, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. Be sure to visit Kathleen on her wonderful site, cleverly named KathleenWarnock.com. She's on Facebook and Twitter too, and you'll find links to all of these sites in today's podcast posting on my site, DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of DrDicksSexAdvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and also informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, enriching, educating, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these shows. So knock yourself out. Okay, on with the show. Kathleen, thank you for coming back to DrDicksSexAdvice.com and this Erotic Mind Show. Hope you had a great week. Welcome back.
Well, it's wonderful to be back.
Good, good, good. So, without further ado, I want to get back to the line of questioning where I left off. I have like four more pages of questions and didn't get very far last week, but had a wonderful time. So, I'd like to introduce a new line of questioning, and I think that you're in the ideal position to make this first comment about this. The line of questioning has to do with reading in general and reading erotica in particular. E-publications and e-readers abound nowadays. Do you think that there is any substantial difference between reading a book of erotica and reading digital erotica?
Well, you can read digital erotica on the subway.
Yes.
And the folks at Kleis and other ebook publishers have noticed that
Yes. You
can read erotica anywhere now if
Yes.
you're reading it on your device.
Yes.
So I think that's actually really expanded the avenues where people can publish their work. And people can publish a short story or something on Amazon
Right.
or on one of the other online
Right.
presses.
Right. And, you know, the interesting thing is that for a book to sell, oftentimes it has to have a really, you know, smutty cover, interesting at least, sexy cover, and that would actually militate against it being consumed, you know, publicly, like on the subway.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I commute the better part of an hour or more each day on the subway, and I have my books with me and I have my magazines with me. And, yeah, you can't be reading this stuff with a cover like that, though I will admit that I have read the manuscripts themselves on the subway, so unless it's really staring over my shoulder, they're not aware that I am reading
Right.
And judging erotica.
Mm. Right. So the reason that I ask is that other artists insist that there is a fundamental difference between seeing an actual canvas and seeing a digital image. Is there the same thing going on between, you know, words on a page and a digital page?
I don't know, because I prefer a book.
Yes.
I love holding a book in my...
Oh, yes, me too.
I love the way books smell. I love turning a page. And I spend all day staring at a computer screen.
Yes.
If I'm going to stare at something in the evening, I would rather stare at a piece of paper.
Oh, thank you. I totally agree with that. And the same thing is true with filmmakers. Some insist that their art is best consumed on a big screen. But lots and lots of people are enjoying movies on tablets and even their telephone screens. So, you know, I mean, there must be something lost, you know, in the translation from, you know, a huge screen down to a little tiny thing that you can hold in your hand.
Well, there's that. But there's also, I'm not going to wholeheartedly say one is better than
right.
the other. When I was a kid, we listened to records, and then we listened to tapes, and then we listened to CDs, and now people pump their music directly into their head with earbuds.
Somebody
must like it.
Right. So, you know, I really enjoy your Facebook page and your Twitter feed, too. Do you like doing that stuff, or is that something that you feel you must do?
No, well, some of it is for the brand, quote unquote.
Right, good.
But some of it is that I enjoy my friends, and if I think of something that I think is interesting to say, I'll put it down. I'm actually not someone who puts every freaking thing down on Facebook or Twitter.
Right.
And before I hit send, I always look at it and think, is anybody other than me going to like this? Is this something that's going to bring somebody an interesting thought? Am I sharing an article that people will like? So in I used to work in newspapers. I kind of think of myself as the features page.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going down my status feed, you're going to find interesting stuff. And as you probably have noticed, I have a weakness for videos of little children falling down. And farts. I do like farts. But then I'll put a really good article that somebody has posted, or a really amazing blog post that made me very happy.
Uh-huh.
So
I love it.
It's to entertain, not just to navel gaze. That's
right.
Probably why I don't blog more often. I only blog when I really have something
right.
to say.
You said that last week, and I thought that was really insightful, because there's a lot of people out there that are just, you know, it's like a mental diarrhea. It just goes right out there. No one's thinking about it necessarily, or people feel compelled to do it. Like, you know, if I need, you know, this is like search engine optimization bullshit nonsense. And it has nothing to do with content. It has to do with, you know, trying to scam, you know, to get to the top of a search engine. And it's just like,
you will never
silly.
Optimize Google.
Right. I really, it's true. It, you know, and it's funny because, you know, when I first started doing the Dr. Dick thing, God, 15 years ago and stuff like that, you know, there wasn't such a thing as Google back then, and or there was, it was just the beginning, and it was an actual search engine, so that you would type in Dr. Dick sex advice, and, you know, my thing would come up first, and now I don't even come up in the first two pages, and it's my stuff, you know, but it's, you know, all the other aggregate sites and, you know, people who are doing my podcast, they all come up before me. I mean, it's just so cuckoo, but there you have it.
Yeah, so I can't solve it, therefore I will not worry about
right.
it.
There you go.
It'll get out there.
So when did you start writing, and when did the erotic stuff begin to show up in your work?
Well, I started writing when I was a kid, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I was writing stories from the time I was in elementary school and junior uh-huh. high, absolutely voracious reader,
uh-huh.
beginning to put together short stories and stuff when I was in high school, and starting to write short plays when I was in college.
So does reading and writing go hand in hand, do you think?
Absolutely. My house is ridiculous with the number of books I have.
Uh-huh.
Every now and then I do a culling, but I can't get rid of a book that a friend of mine wrote. I can't get rid of a book that the author has signed to me.
Right.
They stay here. They're with me.
Yeah. I need to send you some of mine then. At least I know that some of them will have a good home. Oh, dear.
For my friends.
Yes, it's true. And speaking of that, could I ask you to read again?
Okay.
Oh, yay.
Well, yeah. I do try. And one of the things that I've liked best about doing the series, Best Lesbian Erotica, is that I get to do a foreword which sort of talks about what went into each year and the things that are on my mind.
Oh, very cool.
And things that I noticed. And this year I wrote one, and I'll read it to you now. It's called Forward Editing a Life. So, it's been a half decade since Tristan Taormino and Cleus handed the curating duties of this series on to me. Half a decade, and I've read well over 500 stories, worked with 6 different judges, corresponded with writers whose work has been chosen and not from all over the globe, and spent many a late night line editing, negotiating changes, and sitting with the chosen stories before me like a jigsaw puzzle, fitting them into an order that makes sense, has an energy, an arc to it, and finishing up all the housekeeping tasks, assembling bios, noting which pieces have been published before, collecting contracts and turning it all in. And then I'm done, until it's time to look at the proof files, then the dummies, as we used to call them in publishing, and set up the first reading and start visiting my P.O. box to collect next year's submissions. I'm not complaining, mind you. I'm delineating the parts that make the whole. Sometimes when I tell people that I edit lesbian erotica, they say, well, that must be fun. And I usually respond, well, when the stories are good, it is. I am of the tribe that can appreciate a well-crafted piece of erotica, then sit there and debate if a word should be in italics, when to use the past perfect tense, or whether correcting a character's grammar changes the voice of the writer. I can also shout at my computer screen over the words of a would-be writer who can't tell the difference between your, and your, and there, or it's and it's. It can grow into a personal grudge for a story that is full of spelling and grammatical errors, a story submitted in a funny font, or a story that's by someone writing to sell a story rather than tell one.
Oh, interesting.
I relish the exchanges with the writers who are just coming into their own. When I send them an edited version of their story and break down what I did, some might disagree with the changes, but others say, I see what you are doing there. I know something about my own work that I didn't before, and I'm going to use it as I go on. It's because I tend to love writers and want them to hear an encouraging word, want to let them know that someone else believes in their work or gives them permission to believe it in it themselves. Oh, sure, there are some crazy mean ones and people I would prefer not to ride in a car with. But even then, I know that's the result of the journey they've been on, and their work is their way of trying to find some kind of meaning in a life that is sometimes awful or tragic. I make it a point to acknowledge people who are already good at what they do. Each year, I seek out the people whose work I published in previous years and ask them to submit something new. It's a mark of respect, letting them know that their work is something I look forward to reading. Of course, that also means every year there's a larger pool of people to disappoint if their work isn't chosen. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes email me afterward, frosty or penitent, snarky or mock carelessly, asking why their work wasn't picked. Because no matter how long you've been at this, no matter how good you know your own work is, rejection stinks. It's an arrow in the heart. What makes it worth it? I always say, try again next year. It has become my custom to take stories that I particularly like that didn't get in one year and throw them into the pool of submissions for the next. What doesn't suit one volume might suit another. And I've been happy to see stories find a place in the series and later in editions. That's why it's always a pleasure to sit there puzzling over the final lineup, knowing that the stories chosen will become a new whole. And even though this is a best-of book, there always seems to be a theme, something that's on everyone's mind. This year there seems to be a lot of reaching, of needing, of people fighting themselves to get what they want or need. Maybe that's why this foreword is taking the shape it has. Sometimes I think the writing of erotica is about being afraid of something and needing to say it, to have it, to own it. No one can define it except the person at the keyboard who is by herself, even if her lover is asleep in the next room. No one can know if a story is the one that should be told or how except the one telling it and then sending it out, hoping to find someone to read it, to listen, to understand. To me, that's an honorable life, well-lived. That makes it worth it.
Wow.
So that's my foreword for this year's book.
You know, it's your national treasure, darling, honestly. I mean, yeah. You know, because you are so kind, and you are so thoughtful, and like you said last week, you know, being a writer yourself, you have a sympathy you know, for those who struggle to put their thoughts to, you know, to paper or into words anyhow. And, you know, I think that's absolutely remarkable because there are a lot of people out there with axes to grind and, you know, and they're hell-bent on, you know, belittling the people who, you know, submit to them. So it's good for you. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I know the odds are stacked against you no matter what. I know the odds are even worse in some genres. So at least you can give people some respect.
Yes,
and
right. And good for you. Because yeah. I've been on the receiving end of a lot of the no parts, and some of them were just really terrible. I mean, they were just unkind terrible, you know? And mm-hmm. I just thought, well, that wasn't a good way of handling this, if you don't mind me saying so. Anyhow, so let's move on a little bit and talk about your plays. I've noticed that your plays have been produced in New York, London, and Ireland. I also noticed that you have 3 full-length plays, 2 one-act plays, and lots of 10-minute plays. Are any of your plays erotic in nature?
Well, I like to have lesbian characters, and I like to have kissing. So it's not... But it isn't a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, that's, you know, you looked at my website, and I really need to update it. And pretty much, in my plays, if somebody asked me what they're about, invariably, they're about people struggling for moments of grace.
Wow.
And frequently, grace is about being with someone totally without problem and just being together, even if, you know, the world falls apart the next minute.
Right.
So the piece we took to Dublin last year in Ireland, this is the one that just got published on Indie Theatre now, is called That's Her Way. It's a straight romance.
Mm-hmm.
And there is certainly a fair amount of making out in that play, because I like that.
And they say right about what you know, huh?
Yeah.
Huh, Kathleen?
The Dublin Gay Theatre Festival, and the artistic director, who is a dear friend, said, I took it in because you're a lesbian playwright, but anybody who saw this, gay or straight, would identify with what it means to be the different one, the one who has to leave because they can't take you for who you are.
Oh.
I said, thank you! So there's that.
Oh.
And in the play we took 2 years ago, Outlook, there's sort of a triangle in that. And so the leading lady does, in fact, get to kiss 2 other beautiful women,
wow.
Which that makes me happy.
I love it. Can we talk about the differences and perhaps the similarities between writing fiction and playwriting?
Sure. Well, for one thing, you're allowed to put description in fiction. It's really nice.
Uh-huh.
If you're writing a play, you can't say she was tall and slender and she had red hair and blue eyes.
Uh-huh.
Because you're going to get who you get for the actor. In fiction, you can describe someone to the exact picture you see in your head. So that has its rewards. And then being a playwright has its rewards when somebody who's a real-life person is actually standing up there and inhabiting the words. And you see what works and, uh-huh. and how it goes. They both are extremely satisfying in their own way.
So that kind of gets me to my next question, and that is that I've heard other playwrights talk about the written play as one kind of art and the play's production as another kind of art, even though that the production is of the one play. Is that your perception as well?
I think of the play as sort of a blueprint for a house.
Oh.
And you have to write the blueprints carefully because, you know, people can fuck your plays up. If you're working with people who are on the same page as you, you know they're going to bring so much to it that you never thought of. And it's going to be awesome. So when I send, I tend to work with people who I get and who get me. And so we say to each other, here, what about this? What about that? And it's necessary to be both very watchful, but also very selfless as a playwright. Because to make sure that somebody doesn't screw your play up,
mm-hmm.
and that, but also to be able to hand it off in the rehearsal room and watch as it takes on a life of its own.
All right.
I invariably have a dream at the end of a rehearsal process where I'm standing on a dock watching a boat pull away.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the play is theirs now.
Mm-hmm.
Though I will come by and make sure they're saying the lines.
Well, if I remember correctly, you had a rant about this on Facebook not too long ago about producers or directors or, you know, changing a play to suit their purposes. And
yeah, I would be very forceful with people who tried to do that because I am a member of the Dramatists Guild.
Mm-hmm.
In my way, I'm very old school activist labor union kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dramatists Guild says that you can't change my play without my permission.
Right.
And what set me off sort of was that there was a respectable regional theater company down in Florida that got the rights to a very famous modern play and then went and cut some scenes and characters out.
Wow.
Without informing the playwright. And that, of course, is totally against the contract that they signed with both the publisher of the play and the Dramatists Guild, and the guild had to come down on them and shut the play down and say, you do it as written or you don't do it at all.
How
so as an artist, every facet of my being that owns my own work was like, you jerk! How could you do that? And
yeah.
You think you have the right to it.
Yeah.
And one thing I said, I blame fan fiction. But in fact, that actually has something to do with it. On
mm-hmm.
the internet, people can take any character they
yes,
want.
It's true.
And they can write, and you know, there's people who think that they're, that J.K. Rowling doesn't understand her characters. And, you know, when J.K. actually said recently she thought that she was wrong to have Hermione and Ron get together, it really should have been Hermione and Harry, I was like, I felt that. I felt that all through the second part of the
mm-hmm.
things. I'm glad you said that as an author.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who were practically setting their books on fire.
Wow.
And it's like, of course, as an artist, you change as you write the books. And as you go back and look at stuff, you say, I wish I'd done that better. I wish I'd done that differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's tremendous. We'll take it.
I think so too. The fetish and BDSM subgenre of erotica is becoming increasingly more popular. What do you suppose accounts for this?
I actually think it's hit its peak.
Is that right? Interesting.
In the gay and lesbian area.
Oh, I see.
50 Shades of Grey, the straight people are just discovering BDSM and fetish. Really. And I was
true what you say. It really is. It's like, oh my gosh.
I see a production of Venus and Fur, which is a wonderful play by David Ives. And at the end of it, there are people who are just sort of shaking and walking out. And I'm like, oh, that's right. Straight white guys write theater too. It was it's a good play. And it's follows the classic S&M relationship with some tricks in it. I mean, like, if you get a chance to see this play. But people were acting like, oh my God, he invented S&M.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I was getting stories like this 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it's true.
And in fact, I'm sure there's still a community out there, but in terms of what I'm getting in or have been getting in, BDSM has, and Dom Slave and Mistress, you know,
mm-hmm.
all that, less of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know that, and I've published a fair amount of it, so I don't think it's people saying, oh, she doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more like they've moved on to whatever else they're writing and the different trends of things. And there's been more trans stuff, and that's where you
get... Oh, it's true enough.
Yeah. You get pushback from traditional readers of lesbian erotica, if there is such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They think if there's a cock involved, it's not lesbian, whether it's a strap-on cock
or... Even if you say the word, you can't have that in that volume,
The last time we spoke, I read
That's
you Zan.
Right.
And I think Zan's an amazing writer, and Zan's characters are frequently trans men or men or women with a strap-on.
Right.
And I say, that's erotica, that's lesbian, and I've had people say, no, it's not. So there you go. So there's still a great deal going on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it has to do with trans, and some of it has to do with cisgender,
mm-hmm.
and some of it has to do with whether lesbian sex can or should be penetrative.
Yes.
So that's been going on forever. And it as people change, different things become popular. So, and I've read the series from back at the very beginning when you didn't even have the short erotica genre, which is interesting because the first few editions of this book had segments of novels in them.
Wow.
And they had prose, and I think there was even some poetry. Tristan had to beat the bushes, ha ha, so to speak, to get stuff out. And now it's its own industry.
Interesting.
Also, I really hate BDSM that's badly written and doesn't understand role player scenes.
Right.
You know, when people are actually beating up their partner, I'm like, no, that's not BDSM, that's abuse.
It's true. You know, like some unversed personalities, I mean, just throw in a whip and or a paddle or, you know, a pair of handcuffs, and that is supposed to make a BDSM story, but one doesn't capture it. I mean, it's bigger than the sum of its parts, I'm thinking.
Yeah. And I've had stuff that's way out there that I thought was good. And it's not stuff that I even knew about, but I'm like, okay, within the structure of this works. I've had some peeing stories.
Uh-huh.
They never made it all the way in. I passed them on as finalists.
Uh-huh.
I've had some cutting that some of that right. stuff has made it in. I've had people pretending to be animals.
Yes.
There's sexual things with animals.
Yes.
And stuff like that. And it's like, you sell me on it, it goes in. If you even give me a false move that you're just doing this to try and sell a story, boom, it's out.
I love it.
Yeah.
So we only have a few moments left, and I want to get a couple of things from you. First of all, what do you look for in the work of other erotic artists or written erotica?
I like people who are sure. People who you can tell it comes from a deep place in them. And that can cover a lot of ground. I've mentioned to you Zan West,
mm-hmm.
really good writer. Another writer I've published 3 or 4 times is a Scottish writer named Kirsty Logan. She just has such a command of language, it brings tears to my eyes. I love the work. And she's written in a lot of different things. I mean, she's written historical fiction. She's written modern fiction. She's written stuff that's folklore-based, that's outstanding.
Hmm.
So there's another writer whose work I love, and she writes both erotic and quote-unquote literary fiction, Nairn Holtz. She's from Canada. And her stuff is funny and dark and true and real. And I will read anything she writes, no matter what label publicistic cover.
Right.
So there's that. It's honestly... It has to be about the writing. Even if it's very close to the genre and written to a traditional style, if it's damn good writing, it's damn good writing.
Right.
I like D.L. King. She knows what she's doing.
Oh, I'll say.
Yeah.
She's been on my show. She's a treasure. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I like Cheyenne Blue. She knows what she's doing. And Sinclair Sexsmith. These are people who are very serious about the work. And when they send you something, it's good to go.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Those are good writers.
So who inspires you and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Inspiring people. I'm inspired. You know who's really cool? And I went and read a biography last year, and some of it goes back to my interest in things Irish. Eva Gore Booth.
Oh.
In fact, she was... she was the gentry from Ireland. She was the sister of Countess Markievicz, who was the hero of the Irish Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Eva Gore Booth went a different way. She fell deeply in love as a young woman with a partner who was of the working class. And she spent the rest of her life living openly as a lesbian and creating the first lesbian magazine and organizing for workers and organizing unions. And when her sister, Constance, was thrown in jail during the Irish Rebellion, she went out there and raised a stink and helped get her sister out of jail. She argued for Sir Roger Casement, who you may have heard of, was a British peer who was executed for his activities in the rebellion, but not really because of that, because he was a gay man.
Right.
So I like Eva Gore Booth. She's cool.
I love it. One final thing. Any advice for the novice writer of erotica?
Don't send out the first thing that you write. that's really important. Actually, find yourself a supportive group, whether it's in person or online. Go to a workshop. If you go to a fiction workshop and they go, "Yeah, we got to do erotica," don't go to that. Find a fiction workshop with a good teacher and say, "I write erotic fiction," and they say, "Okay, bring it on in," then you're good.
Yeah.
And see, cultivate a cohort of people who will read and give you honest feedback.
Right.
You know, it's one thing when you see your friends on Facebook and say, "Hey, I started a novel," and 6 weeks later, like, "Hey, I finished the novel. Who knows?" No. Don't do that.
I love it.
I said in a blog post once, you know, do not send your child out naked in a blizzard. It's true.
I love it. You are such a dear. Well, this is it for today. I could go on and on. You are so remarkable, so easy to chat with, so wise, so kind.
I've been around a long time. Meanness.
Well, before you go today, would you walk us around your website and tell us where we can buy your work?
Okay, the website needs to be updated. There's a very nice picture of me that was taken by Katrina Del Mar at 6 or 7 years old, and I don't want to have another one taken because it's such. I need to update the fact that the front page went to Ireland 2 years ago. There is Too Many Hats, a blog that I write when I am moved by something, and when I sit down to write something, I take care of it. And the last time I wrote was in September. It happens. But I try and give people something that's worth their time to read. Then there's my playwright aspect, and there's some nice pictures on there, and there's a few of my full-length plays there. And if you just look at the pictures, you can tell I write some out there stuff. Then there's the Best Lesbian Erotica section, which I also need to update because the last thing on it is from 2 years ago. But before I forget, Laura Antonio is taking over as series editor.
Is that right? She's been on the show.
Well, she's on it. She's got the guidelines posted on her website.
Oh, terrific.
Take the submissions by email April 1st. If you're someone who writes the erotica, get it to her by April 1st. And as a matter of fact, I've already talked to her. She's New York-based as well. And we're hoping to continue our tradition of the Best Lesbian Erotica reading at my reading series, Drunken Careening Playwrights. No, Drunken Careening Writers, not Drunken Careening Playwrights. I'm Drunken Careening Playwrights. And then there's a section here on En Avant Playwrights, which is one of the playwrights collectives that I've helped form. And we did some fun stuff. And then I do a little online bulletin board for playwrights, and it's called En Avant Playwrights, and I get every opportunity that I get in to submit your work. And I divide them up into categories from short to long form with residencies, readings, grants, etc.
Wow.
I call it my OCD hobby. Started it in 2003, and we have over 4 million page views. So that makes me happy. It's just a simple little bulletin board on Youku that's free. And I do it in my spare time, but it's one of my things that I like doing.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen, for being so generous with your precious time. We are all the richer for the experience. Until we talk again, which I hope is really soon, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I better go clean the place up.
Be well and happy. Bye now.
Oh, bye. Thanks so much.
Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for a swell Q&A show and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads video on demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-for-minute sort of deal, so your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these great shows. So knock yourself out. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.